Hello, I'm Bea Kupin, and you are watching 36 Years, where we talk about Philippine news, democracy, and politics. On May 9, 2022, the Philippines elected as its 17th President, Ferdinand Bongbong Marcos Jr. He is the second Marcos to hold the post, the first being his father and namesake, the late dictator who was ousted during the People Power Revolution of 1986. Would you believe that was 36 years ago? Here we try to make sense of where Philippine democracy is heading 36 years after the revolution. We are available on all Raptor social media platforms and on wherever you listen to podcasts. So our other Raptor shows, you better listen to them and check them out. Welcome to this week's episode. No long headlines for this week because I'm on leave, would you believe that? But before we went on leave, we did record an interview with historian Manolo Quezon where we talked about the first week of the Marcos presidency and among other things, yung implications ng appointments niya, how he's been doing so far, the highs and lows of his cabinet picks so far. And I think it's an interesting thing to listen to and to ponder on as we anticipate the first State of the Nation address on July 25. Speaking of which, the first SONA is happening on July 25. We will be covering that. Me and several of my colleagues from Rappler, we will be at the Senate, the Batasang Pambansa, and even outside the Batasang Pambansa to cover the first SONA wherein President Marcos will be addressing the 19th Congress for the first time. During the SONA, we expect him to kumbaga send out his marching orders for everyone in government and also, I guess, civic society. So, we'll be seeing you then. I'll be seeing you then. So, Manolo, first week or two of the new president, the second President Marcos. I read your column, actually. This is coming out a week after your column in the Inquirer comes out. But like you talked about how this administration is shaping up to be a rather conservative, it's not the Duterte, the first few weeks of the Duterte administration. Can you expound on that?
Yeah, because each administration, of course, tries to set a tone and a pace when it starts. It's a bit different when you have a restoration regime. We've had three restoration regimes. You had the first one was Macapagal Arroyo, the second was Aquino, and the third, of course, is Marcos. They have their own, in a sense, traditions to uphold, whether they want to or not. And sometimes part of restoration is the part where those who are coming back don't want to be reminded of what came before or remind others of what came before. As they say, it's complicated. In this case, the Marcos myth is very strong because it was cultivated to achieve this restoration. So what do I mean? The whole idea is that a Marcos administration is supposed to have a strong cabinet. It's supposed to have a very self-assured chief executive. It's supposed to hit the ground running. In this case, it practically did none of these things except for one aspect, which was the economic team. It was very careful because the expectations were very high and there could have been economic repercussions from the very start. So it made the point of having a sober, credible economic team. It had, in many ways, Estrada written all over it because many of the names that were relied on came from the Estrada administration. Very UP-centric, very technocratic in a sense, but with for that particularly UP sense of being politically adept while technocratically accomplished. So that's why you had the choice of Diokno for Secretary of Finance. You had Medalla for Banco Central. Both are known And more importantly, Jokno was given very clearly a free hand in filling the economic position. So in that sense, no one panicked. Everyone knew what to expect. Everyone knew also that Ben Diokno knows how to balance pleasing the political bosses while keeping the interference from the palace at bay to a certain extent. The rest, however, was interesting because there were some major gaps that remained in the cabinet and actually remain unfilled in the cabinet to today. This has not happened before. Even in a revolutionary situation, administrations were very careful to fill the cabinet. This is the first time in living memory, and perhaps ever, where these gaps exist. So it shows you that either the president has to deal the hand that he was dealt, and you can read it one way that people are not eager to sign on right away, and so there are the gaps. Or you can read it in a more positive way that the president is in no rush to fill those gaps. Of course, the palace will say the president is in no rush because he's calm and he knows what to do. And everyone else will read it as a big question mark. Why is it so hard considering you have such a very big mandate? Let's not forget, this is the third highest mandate ever achieved in an election in our country. Why it's not being filled. Now, I was looking, for example, at one of the most boring but very obvious ways an administration sets its tone is through the first issuances or orders it issues. Very interestingly, the first two weren't even by the president, but by the executive secretary acting in the name of the president. And then basically, it was a lot of housekeeping. It was basically saying, as every administration likes to do, everyone who was hired by the previous administration is out of a job, and we're going to fill them. In the meantime, everyone stays in until we replace them. Okay, that's fine. The second was to remind everyone to do complete staff work, which is a reminder that it wasn't being done previously. Then when the president finally started issuing his first issuances, there was nothing sort of earth-shaking. There's no order here creating any sort of fact-finding commission or anything. It was really a lot of housekeeping, abolishing the presidential committee on criminality or whatever it was, which was obviously just sort of restoring the functions of the office of the executive secretary, abolishing the position of cabinet secretary, which again was a function that was created under Benigno Aquino III for the politics of his time, and essentially basically reminding everyone that the executive secretary is going to be a very central, powerful figure who enjoys the president's confidence. And again, this is in a way returning it to the way it has been for the longest time. But the fact is that you had to make these reminders on paper shows you what was happening over the previous not only 6 but 12 years. So it's an administration that is doing it by the book, as it's been done for the longest time. But again, nothing particularly earth-shattering. The only one of interest, as I noticed, was a new presidential assistant was created that reports to Lagdameo, who is the special assistant to the president. And this is a special advisor for the military and the police, which shows you that's where the president feels he's going to need some backstopping moving forward. Again, this is a response to the previous administration, which, of course, had put in place signed a law, for example, giving a fixed term to the to the AFP chief of staff, which is tying the hands of a president for the first time. That wasn't the case. So again, it's a very conservative but very thorough and very conscious housekeeping.
Yeah. Siguro yung mas lazy na way to put it is it's very boring. But I say that out loud with baggage na as me especially, kami as media, hindi kami dapat, parang sa first week kasi nagulantang kami at how boring everything was. Maybe a lot of people were so used to the bombastic Duterte administration. But we had to remind ourselves na this being bombastic is not the default of an administration of a government. And
it's actually interesting because at the very least, a government wants to be driving the headlines. Well, the major headline, of course, was that the new president got a second round of COVID. So in a sense, you know, that immediately puts a stop on everything, because when the president isn't front and center, nothing really moves in the palace. You know that. So what we've seen, however, is something interesting, which is slowly but surely the gaps are being filled. So you had in many ways, a non-controversial appointment for DENR, because that could have gone either way. DENR is either usually an advocate, someone who's really passionate about the environment, or someone who's a fixer. Reassuringly, this is someone who's a professional environmentalist. Okay, so fine. Nothing unusual there. You had someone for Department of Energy, which was turning into a big question mark because of the previous names that had been floated. Again, someone who has held the job previously and held it, you know, not too controversially either. So, again, it's a stability appointment.
Yeah.
One could read it, as I did, that it is also a sign of a restoration of the balance of forces, so to speak, because this is someone now who comes from the Arroyo administration. So tried and tested, but again, more along the lines of the previous Arroyo administration. And that's important because that is an important, that's the third sort of block in the ruling coalition. So it sends a sign that everything is happy and normal.
Manolo, when you say restoration, it's a restoration regime. What are we restoring? I ask this because the whole UNITEAM campaign, the whole sama-sama tayong babangon muli, this promise, this vague promise of babalik tayo sa dati, hindi naman nila, they never expounded on ano yung dati. Although some of the senatorial bets would hint at the first Marcos administration, yung achievements of that admin. Pero never nila talaga pinuno yung definition of ano yung greatness na yun. And I guess
I think you have to move a lot closer. I think we are all going to be making a big mistake if we assume that both the candidates and the public have a longer frame of mind than just the past 6 years. And in fact, the past 3 years. This was, let's not forget, this was a pandemic election.
Yeah.
And therefore, the framework of where, you know, paano tayo babangon? Babangon tayo kung saan tayo in 2019 bago nagsimula yung pandemya. I think that's about as far as everything. Now, of course, in the background, there is a lot of nostalgia feels, and the, each of these, you know, politics is addition. So of course, there's a pitch made to the old loyalists from 19 forgotten, but there's also an appeal made to the new loyalists, we can call them, who have been convinced since the 1990s, and more specifically since the 2000s, who were not even around when Ferdinand Sr. Was in power, but who can be sold this cocktail of Taliano gold, plus your parents were happy and your Lolo and Lola were happy sort of thing, which counts for a lot, and that all comes together. But again, first and foremost, if you looked at the surveys, everyone was just looking from the point of view of getting back to life as normal as it was before the pandemic.
Yeah.
And that is where you needed a message, because No one wants a lot of fighting and no one wants a lot of negativity when you're coming out of 3-4 years of pandemic craziness.
Yeah.
So I think that's what we have to focus. But of course, there is a restoration aspect. The restoration aspect, of course, is whether everyone is super conscious about it or not, but there are certain sort of trends that keep coming back. One of them is an election, is a referendum. And if you have a name like Marcos, which is a polarizing name, it is a referendum on, are they still going to be on the defensive, or in a sense, are they receiving a forgive and forget?
Yeah.
And even more than a forgive and a forget, are they receiving a kind of approval that erases everything? Very bluntly, an election of this magnitude, as they enjoyed for whatever reason, can be considered absolution for what happened in the past. And in fact, the surveys also showed it, that people would vote for people who were attacked and against people who did attacking, which is why in the beginning of the inaugural address, the people who crafted it had read the survey. And so the new president said, I spent the election not attacking anyone, which is supposed to immediately send off a positive reinforcement to what the surveys had been saying all along.
Yeah.
So there is that element of restoration and, in a sense, revalidation. It happened for the Macapagals. GMA made the core of her campaign in 1998 a sort of return to all the old Macapagal loyalists who were still there all over the country and had been keeping their heads down for 30 years at that time. The Aquino campaign did it as well. It was as much a revalidation, because remember, it came after years of being attacked by GMA and everyone. So the same for the Marcoses. And it's also why, much as the public, much as the media tried to make something of it, no one really freaked out when one of the first things they did was have a birthday party for Madame.
Yeah.
Because, of course, that's what a restoration, it's very Pinoy na, to this thing of panahon na namin. That's very, very Pinoy, and everyone understands that.
Yeah. Bilog yung bola, weather lang yan. And I think, I don't know, I might personally reject this, pero siguro meron ding concept na deserve naman nila yun. Well, but that is one of the narratives that they did push during the election. Biktima sila nung people power revolution.
But then, again, there's a side element here that makes it very interesting. It's not a full-on restoration because it could only have happened with the help of the Duterte.
Yeah.
And with, I think, everyone at the very least subconsciously, if not consciously, understanding that it required an endorsement from the Duterte for the Marcoses to have a chance in places that never forgot, Mindanao and the Visayas, where up to 2016 they had not forgotten. So in a sense, that's what makes for this uneasy alliance that has now taken place, because if anyone can claim that they made this election, personally, I believe it was Gloria Macapagal Arroyo for bringing the Dutertes and the Marcoses together, but also the Dutertes can say they own a big chunk of this to an extent that hasn't been seen precisely since before martial law. You haven't seen this sort of merger since before martial law.
Yeah. I mean, the former President Arroyo was a key negotiator for a lot of, especially in Mindanao, I think. And maybe that's a story that will come out in the coming weeks and months, kasi ngayon hindi pa siya masyadong hinog, hindi pa andang ikwento ng mga people involved. But yeah, during the campaign, a lot of negotiations were spearheaded by the former president, cashing in former allies, talking to former allies and saying na supportan niyo na si Bongbong Marcos kahit
you know, I was telling everyone that GMA, she was a confluence of her own history and our national history, because she can talk to the Dutertes and the Marcoses on a very unique level as a former president to former President Duterte, as a presidential child to two other presidential children, Bongbong Marcos and Sara Duterte, as you know, as a speaker, party leader, as someone from Iligan, because her childhood was in Iligan, you know, so
that's
many
right.
levels. That is uniquely hers. But it was, I think, it was fundamentally as a former president and as a former child of a president. Yeah. This is a very small club, and she is the senior member of it now.
Yeah. Siya pala ang totoong unity. Manolo, nabanggit mo nga, yung parang, syempre hindi mo naman maiwasan na yung major discussion in the 2022 elections was, you know, the restoration of the Marcos name. But it's, thank you for pointing out na, I think for a lot of voters, yung mas core concern naman talaga ay the past 3 years under the pandemic, and the survey show that, right? Yung top concern was absolutely the economy, finding jobs, finding food to eat. How do we make sense of that though? Because we always say, oh, it's important to remember our history, but we can't really blame the average Filipino kung yung hugutin nilang memory ay 3 years ago at hindi 40 years ago.
Of course, I mean that's the part of democracy, na, that you have to understand yung ano ba yung, di ba, ano yung malapit sa sikmura at ano yung importante dun sa butante. Ngayon, what happened in this case, I believe, was you know, I do believe every election in a sense is about feel. It's driven primarily by which candidate is more likable. And then which candidate can provoke the more essentially positive feels. Now, at the time when everything was really wrecked because of the pandemic, I guess we have to accept that the feels people wanted were positive ones. So from the moment that the first Marcos ad came out, I thought that everyone else was in trouble, because it, you know, it didn't have to say anything except project the feels that people were craving after 3 years of one piece of bad news and one piece of hardship after another. And others that were focusing on things that were becoming less and less important, I couldn't catch up. Also, for example, then the contrast became the Marcos campaign, if I recall correctly, actually only did 3 ads. And the story imagery was, it started with Bongbong with a pinwheel, and ended with Sara and Bongbong with a pinwheel.
Yeah.
Okay, one story, absolutely clear. Beautifully done. The leading opposition under Lenny couldn't decide what its message was and tried, I don't know, 8 different messages in 3 or 4 months.
Yeah.
So the miracle is that she was able to get a third to a fourth of the country after all of that. And I think that boils down to her.
Yeah.
And no longer anyone else trying to do help her.
Yeah. And it's also hard too, because they tried to, I don't want to say not take over, but also push the unity narrative for themselves. But it's hard to push a unity narrative when there are several opposition candidates running.
Everyone talks about in politics, there has to be authenticity. Well, very authentically, ang nag-unite mga Duterte at mga Marcos, and solid yung unity. I mean, for the campaign, kasama na rin si GMA. There, you know, I was telling everyone, you know, this was the most consequential tandem since Cory and Doy. Think of it. I mean, it's like the upside down world, di ba?
Yeah.
And then the rest, hindi man lang makasundo. And then again, I mean, in politics, first out the gate, if Bongbong comes out, and I was telling people this again, I mean, imagine how mind-boggling it is. The candidate of hope and unity is Ferdinand Marcos Jr.
Yeah.
Exactly. Just because they were the first out with a clear message.
And then
of course that's where all the other things come in. You have all the money in the world, so of course lahat ng mga nanonood ng telenovela and primetime shows, wall-to-wall Marcos campaign ad, if you remember. And they didn't even bother, everyone else was so poor, they were pouring their ads into YouTube. The Marcoses were wealthy enough that they did it the old-fashioned way and flooded free TV and free radio. And of course, they had a big chunk of the media, and the rest was being beaten up, you know. And then, of course, they had a lock on the machinery. So it was a classic, you know. And in many ways, this was I was telling people, if the first, I mean, I know this having worked in campaigns, the first test.
Yeah.
Of the fitness of a president is the campaign they run. In which case, you can say that Marcos passed it with flying colors. By all accounts, he didn't have any problems with his creative team. By all accounts, they did everything right. He didn't even say anything, and that requires a lot of discipline as well.
Yeah. I mean, there were some hitches na naabutan siya ng ambush interview with the media, but very, very few and far apart.
And more importantly, they could pivot quickly. So tuwing may the police o mali, they would either unleash all the trolls, in which case bugbog lahat, or they would pivot and then say the right thing the next day. So hindi tumatagal ang istorya.
Very agile. Manolo, nabanggit mo kanina yung unique position ni GMA, but I think you're also in a unique position. Actually, sa show na to, mga dalawang beses ka na name drop ni Leloy tsaka ni Xiao Chua when they talked about history and their insights on current political situation. No? But I think you have a very unique, you're in a very unique club, because as you're a historian, you've also been in the front lines of a government in the past, of an administration. How do you... Yeah, going back to this idea na it's important to remember history or past, but you also have to focus on the now. And I'm sure you're very well aware of that sa lahat ba naman ng crisis at challenges under the late President Aquino's presidency. So how do you balance that? And I ask that from the perspective not just of a citizen, but specifically siguro kami sa media, and maybe... now, so you're the opposition forces or even mga administration forces who mean well, right? Who want to balance that at the same time.
Well, it's supposed to come from the institutional memory that veterans have. There's supposed to be a mix of, one thing that never changes. Every administration is a coalition. It's really cobbled together from different groups, many of which can't stand each other. And are eager to kill each other, but they've been brought together and they succeed. Winning sometimes is the easy part, because then the hard part becomes running the show. In the first place, there's a huge number of jobs to fill. I don't know. The one estimate that I saw from a few years back was the president fills about 10,000 positions, our presidential appointees. So. That's a lot of people. The previous administration never even got to finish it. There were a lot of vacancies up to the end.
And yet he created so many task forces.
Well, every president will do that. But so on one hand, you have to pay your debts when you come in. At the same time, you have to sort of come up with a game plan. And that's not often... part of it, because you're waging a campaign day by day. Why are you going to be thinking about the next year, 6 years or 3 years?
Yeah.
So there'll often be a, you know, there'll often be different groups. There's one group that is trying to think long term.
Yeah.
That group is always being told, hold on, we have a fire to put out right now. And then there's always the fact that the president ultimately has to decide a lot of things personally. And then it will always boil down to what that president decides to spend their time on. You know, there will be always be some parts of government that they are more interested in and more passionate about, and others they care much less about. And of course, everyone in government thinks that their part is the most important thing to the future of the nation. So you know, binabalanse dun. And now it's I think what people are trying to figure out is that if the Aquino years were sort of the last gasp of the old relationship between public opinion and officials, where there's a give and take, and the officials actually feel that what the public and the media feels matters, and it's now has now been replaced by an attitude that it's all a matter of slicing and dicing to, first of all, isolate those who disagree and pump up those who agree, then that's a very different attitude. And then it will be reflected in the way things are run. I mean, basically, the question then becomes, objectively, you don't need media anymore.
Yeah.
Because you can create your own media.
Yeah.
And if you can create your own media, and that can be tailor-fit to so many different publics, then you just have to do a little thing, something every so often to keep all the little groups happy, because they don't talk to each other anymore.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. They're in these silos.
Oh, everyone is in their silos.
Yeah.
So that's very interesting. And I think if I would assume that the Marcoses have studied this hard. I find it very ironic, because I think the one who has studied it the most would be Amy Marcos, but she's not even talking to her brother anymore.
Yep.
Because she's been edged out. So you have a very interesting thing that the Marcoses have now achieved their restoration, but they are actually probably more divided at this moment than they ever have been since they went into exile.
Yeah.
That's very interesting. And how is that going to play out with everyone else noticing this is going to be interesting.
Yeah. The challenge for an already embattled media. No, no thanks to President Duterte. Thank you, Manolo. This is part one of the interview. The second part, we'll be talking about another institution na sobrang, I think, extra interesting given the political situation that Manolo talked about.
If you're listening to this after the fact of the sauna, look back and listen to Rappler's live coverage of the State of the Nation address. If you're listening to this before July 25, bookmark, maybe by the time this interview is out, bookmark the page on which you can get updates on the day itself. Until then, I'll be seeing you. I hope you have a really good week ahead. Bye!